Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights. This is the Bald-Faced Truth.
Did you see the Golden Knights coming? I know Las Vegas sportsbooks did not see the Golden Knights coming. If you listen to Friday's show, we had Jay Cornegay on from the Westgate Sportsbook, who said that they took bets from people in Las Vegas, lines of people who bet Las Vegas to win the Stanley Cup at 300-1 and 400-1. And he said there was significant liability across the sports books in Vegas because everybody in Vegas wanted a piece of the action. Hey, let me bet on the team. It'll be fun. It's their first season. Jason Gay of the Wall Street Journal. How are you, man?
I'm good, thanks. I wish I were one of those people who had them. They actually got up to, I think, 500-1 at Westgate.
That's crazy. And and Westgate, you know, the guys at Westgate were saying, you know, they were still rooting for the team because it's such a feel-good story in Vegas.
Yeah.
You say you didn't see it coming. You met with them a year ago. What did you see a year ago?
I saw an office building. I mean, it's crazy that, you know, we're talking about this as a, you know, an amazing story of an expansion team. The team itself did not exist this time last year. I went out to see the marketing folks for the Golden Knights in mid-May last year and, you know, came away with a lot of optimism from them about Vegas as a potential pro sports town. But I have to level with you. You know, I got in the car afterwards and said, you know, I don't know if I see what they see. You know, Vegas, of course, had been untested as a pro sports market. But more importantly, we know what a slog it traditionally is with an expansion team. You usually stink for a whole bunch of years before anything ever gets going. And I just didn't think a new sports town would be able to endure that kind of stinkage. But boy, was I wrong on every level.
What is happening on the ice for them that puts them four wins away from a Stanley Cup championship?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I mean, let's just take two players. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury is the goaltender who they acquired from Pittsburgh, and that's just, you know, a bit of good luck. You know, Pittsburgh had good depth at goaltender, had to expose Fleury during the expansion draft, and, you know, Vegas picked him up, smart acquisition, but again, you know, nothing is promised. You don't know he's going to perform at the incredible level he's performed at this season and into the playoffs. And then take a guy like William Wild Bill Carlson, a young guy, three seasons into the NHL. He had a total of 18 goals, was averaging six goals a season, turns around 43. That's a Las Vegas club record, I want you to know. 43 goals in one season this year for the Golden Knights. You know, no one looks at a chart and sees that kind of productivity coming. A lot of things happen, of course. You know, I think there are some folks who say, well, you know, the way that the playoff format works in the NHL, where, you know, sometimes top conference opponents knock each other up early, that may have played to them, but, you know, you play who you play. We've been through this enough to know that what they're doing is quite special.
Is there something about the opposition being in Las Vegas, T-Mobile Arena, the distractions? I mean,
I know where you're going.
Yeah, I mean, is it possible that that's at play here at all?
That's a good question. I can't answer that with any kind of authority. It's always been a longstanding thing here in New York City that a good bet is to bet on the Knicks or the Rangers or one of those 12 noon Sunday games because the opponent has been out enjoying the New York nightlife, presumably into Sunday morning, and they're going to look a little haggard out there on the ice or on the court. I don't know if there's a comparable with the Golden Knights. I don't even know where the opposition stays, if they're in a casino, if they're somewhere off the strip. But I'm sure a lot of people are going to be giving a much harder look at what this franchise has accomplished in such a short time. And if it means we need to legalize gambling across this country. Oh, wait, we already did that.
You write in your piece here, I'm going to quote from it, the Hockey News picked the Knights to finish dead naked last in their division. So did ESPN. USA Today penciled them in as the worst team in the NHL, full stop. When you wrote, this isn't going to work, did you hear from Las Vegas hockey fans?
You know, I was writing a news story at the time, and I wasn't, like, dumping the idea. I definitely raised a skeptical eyebrow to this. What I just assumed, however, was that the team would be lousy. And it's not just the pundits and the hockey writers who predicted a year of misery in Las Vegas. Their own ownership, Mr. Foley came out and said, look, this is, you know, we hope to be competitive within three seasons. You know, maybe we can compete for a cup 5-6 years down the line. Nobody saw this kind of transformation coming.
We're talking to Jason Gay of the Wall Street Journal. If Vegas wins this, is it, you know, does this parlay into Vegas becoming a great sports town all of a sudden, or is this just a nice story in an unlikely place?
I think it's all the above. You know, obviously it's a great, great story in and of itself. You know, a great bet by the city that they're ready for professional sports, and we haven't even gotten to what the, you know, home ice advantage is there. I mean, it's this funny, glitzy, medieval, you know, pregame show that has all the sort of, like, craziness that you expect from that town. You know, and obviously a really successful team on the ice. But, yeah, I mean, look, the Raiders are on their way to Las Vegas, and that will, you know, I find it hard to believe that a football team in Vegas won't be a hit. In fact, I thought that was a safer bet than the Golden Knights. You're only talking about having to fill 8 regular season home games, you know, sort of when you think about the road travel that football fan bases will do, well, you know, if you're a, you know, Patriots fan or a New York Giants fan, well, of course, you look at that schedule and you say, oh, we're going to go to, you know, New York this year, we're going to go to Vegas. Oh, let's go to Vegas. That sounds like a great bet. So, you know, there's all of a sudden great health around the idea of Las Vegas as a pro sports town.
Jason Gay, Wall Street Journal with us. You also have another project, if I can shift gears. The New York Times bestseller called Little Victories. I love it. A sports writer's notes on winning at life. What made you write this? What was the inspiration?
I mean, candidly, I just sort of wanted to write a book forever, and I wanted to write a book that I knew I could finish and hopefully read. And over the time that I've been at the Journal, we've done a lot of, you know, sort of rules around the idea of, you know, family and Thanksgiving and the holidays. And this was going to kind of be a blown up version of that where, you know, jumped away from sports and got into, you know, other elements of life, you know, office success, office failures, hires, fires, you know, health and business and family and so on. And so it was a real treat to be able to do it. And, you know, the reaction to it was tremendous.
What, you know, for people who pick it up, because, you know, my executive producer who suggested I talk with you about it said, this is perfect. This is all the stuff away from sports that you like to talk about. So give us an idea for somebody picking up the book. I mean, is it true that you give advice for putting together the perfect wedding music list, the DJ music list, and music and parenting? Is it just a collection like that?
Yeah, it is true. I mean, it is, you know, again, sort of off sports. There is life advice in there. Take it with a grain of salt. I am not presenting myself as any sort of guru or expert here, but I will give you very good specific advice about planning your wedding playlist. You know, we all go through that, right? Are we going to go with the DJ? Are we going to go with the band? You know, what's appropriate music to play? How do we satisfy everybody? I'm trying to be your friend, trying to be your guide as you navigate that kind of thing. As far as parenting is concerned, I am not a Jedi there. My children are still young. I'm making mistakes every morning, every day. You know, having a little fun with the idea because, you know, all of us, you know, we've been in that airport bookstore, right? And you're looking at the books, and I'd say a solid third of them nowadays are telling you, you know, you're too big, you're too poor, you don't do this right. You know, I'm an expert. I'm going to solve it. And it was a little bit of a chance to make some fun of that sort of culture of advice that is so prevalent in publishing today.
I love your advice on being cool. You say no activity on the planet besides watching golf on TV wastes as much time and creates more turbulent feelings of personal insecurity as trying to be cool. I love that because you have people who spend waste a lot of time trying to do what they think they're supposed to do instead of what they want to do.
Right. I mean, listen, when we're watching games, basically that's all advertising is convincing you if you, you know, purchase X product, whether it's a car or a piece of clothing or a pharmaceutical or anything, that it's going to make you a better person, a cooler person. You're more in the slipstream of society. And I just feel it's sort of a lot of wasted energy to obsess over that kind of thing. Because, you know, I've seen you, John, and you and I are not that cool, you know, to borrow that line from Almost Famous.
I love that, too. All right. Can I ask you, though, because we got a lot of millennials around here, including a millennial who wore a fanny pack one time. Is a fanny pack acceptable to wear? I mean, is that a victory if you can wear a fanny pack and feel good about it?
This is a very good question and very current to my life. I think they are making a cultural comeback. My wife came home the other day. My wife is a runner, and she came home with something that was called like a run belt. And, you know, it had this, you know, cool branding on it. I was like, honey, that's a fanny pack. She's like, it's not a fanny pack. It's a run belt. I was like, that's just a rebranding of a fanny pack. Listen, I got some great advice years ago from somebody in fashion who I was writing about, and they said the secret to any great fashion is to look like you meant to do it. It doesn't have to be the cool cutting-edge material. You just have to carry it with the right attitude and confidence. And so if you're going to wear that fanny pack, don't wear it bashfully. Wear it like you mean it.
Yeah, you gave some advice on airport eating. What do you say people should not ever do in an airport?
Wow. You know, I think the main thing you have to do is you have to take in consideration for the fact that, look, you know, you can eat whatever you want in the terminal, but when it comes time to board the plane, you have to take into consideration the olfactory effect of whatever it is that you're going to be consuming on a very confined tin tube for the next couple of hours. You know, we've all sat next to that person who really thought it was a great idea to bring a giant bowl of soup onto the plane and have to have dealt with that. Although I have noticed, and I don't know if this is a new thing or a function of airport terminal food options getting a little better, I've seen a couple of folks walking on with a whole pizza onto an airplane, and they never seem to be in the mood to share. They just sort of like, this is just sort of private eating behavior. They're going to sit there by themselves in 35C and devour an entire 8-slice pizza. More power to them, I say.
Jason Gay, Wall Street Journal. The book is called Little Victories. Check that out and read them in the Wall Street Journal. Jason, thank you, man.
Hey, thank you. Have a good one.
All right, bye-bye. There he is. Life advice from a sports writer. Who else? By the way, the other thing you should never do at an airport is you should not be eating seafood in an airport. Like, you know, the catch of the day at the airport restaurant, like how far are they going to get the catch of the day? Punch It Audio, the best sound from all around, is coming up. First, though, I want to take a phone call. Brian is in Lincoln City. He wants to talk about Neil Olshey. Brian, what's up, man?
Thank you. You got me fired up. That is the stupidest thing in a million stupid things that the Blazers have ever said. He didn't know he needed playoff caliber people.
Yeah.
But I got a fix. You're Paul Allen. You get out your checkbook. You guarantee Danny Ainge total control. Total autonomy. It's yours. I'll pay you $20, $25 million a year.
The problem, though, with Danny Ainge or any other general manager who's going to have options is that they can go to a team, like you said, the autonomy becomes valuable, that doesn't have an owner looking over your shoulder who wants to do all of the de facto general manager stuff. And that's what Paul Allen wants to do. The problem I have with Neil Olshey is a different one. He is smarter than you. He's smarter than me. And he likes to let everybody know that. Leave it here.
Your mom called. You left your game at home.
1029 and 750 The Game.
Where the pros play.
Pros play.
Tweet at me at John Canzano BFT. Make sure that you are subscribed, by the way, to the podcast of this fine radio program. SoundCloud, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast, just search for The Bald-Faced Truth. And if you like it, give it a review. And if you don't like it, buzz off. I want to go out to the phone lines. Carl has called in. Carl, what's on your mind, man?
Well, I reckon I grew up in a shed.
You grew up in a shed?
Yes, sir. Slept on the floor with a hole in it. I want to tell them kids a commencement speech.
Yeah, what would you tell kids at a commencement speech? Graduation time.
Well, I reckon one day I was there. My daddy was a hard-working man. Not that I can say the same for myself. Come home and see Jesse Dixon on top of my mama. I just plain seen red. Picked up a sling blade. Some folks call it a Kaiser blade. Reckon I hit Jesse upside the head with it and plumb cut his head off. My mama started yelling, "What'd you kill Jesse for?" That made me even madder than what Jesse done. So I hit her in the head with it.
Let's see. We've had Rocky Balboa. We've had now Sling Blade. I cannot wait for tomorrow. About the same time, too. About 1:20 each day. We get a visit from a movie character. You know, any requests for tomorrow? Can we get some Godfather, maybe? What would you like to hear?
Anyone from Game of Thrones, please.
How about you, Judah? You got a request?
Yeah, Godfather sounds about right. Like Pacino.
Like a Godfather or a Scarface character. You know? By the way, back to the Sling Blade reference there. I gave the guy some liberty because he's in character, and I think we all believe that he's in character. So I don't need you calling in saying that was a offensive take. I consider it art, and art can't be very offensive.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio,
presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
The Preakness was on over the weekend. Justify in the 141st running of the Preakness.
And they're into that stretch, and Mike Smith goes to the whip on Justify. Kent Fold is closing in with Bravazo on the outside as the field comes into the final furlong. It is Justify in front. Good magic on the outside. Kent Fold, Bravazo, Justify. He's unstoppable. He won the Preakness. Bravazo was second. Kent Fold was third. Good magic was fourth. And a final time of 1:55.45. Not even the fog could stop him.
Not even the fog. Bob Baffert looking for a triple crown. It comes down to the Belmont. It's the longest of the three races. And by the way, close observers of the Preakness noted that Justify appeared down the stretch to turn his head and look over at the competition as if to say, Aaron Weiss. He asked his mother for some space and then went out and collected $1.39 million for his first PGA Tour win. Weiss, what propelled you to the win? Punch it.
Just a ton of self-belief, you know. It was always there, but to do it on the stage, to know I've done it, you know, really helped me today. I felt oddly calm all day long, and to pull that off and to play as good as I did bogey-free today was awesome.
Look, he was tied for second behind Jason Day at Quail Hollow earlier this month. He shot a closing round 65. He finished 23 under to win the Byron Nelson tournament in Dallas. And by the way, his focus wasn't helped when he got a text in the gym on Sunday morning saying there would be a 4-hour rain delay. He tried to fill the time, and his mother cluttered his thoughts with the benefits of winning that thing, like you can do this and you can do that. And he said he made her leave the room. He needed to stop thinking about it. Former Oregon Duck. Very calm on the inside, or was he?
You looked very calm on the outside. We were wondering what was going on the inside. Were you as calm on the inside as the outside?
Yeah, very. It was kind of surprising to me, honestly. I had to almost not fake myself into being nervous. I was super calm, you know. I was more nervous yesterday, oddly enough, and, you know, just it's pretty incredible to get this win.
The incredible thing isn't just that he became the second youngest player to win the Byron Nelson behind Tiger Woods, but also that it's clear that he's nowhere near as good as he's going to be someday. If he stays healthy, if he stays focused, if the trajectory of Aaron Weiss's career continues as we all suppose it might. I think he got a makings of a solid top 10 player in golf here. Claim him as your own, state of Oregon, even though he spent like a year here. Kevin Durant and the Warriors, blowout victory. They win game 3 by 41. Kevin Durant says, here's what it meant. Punch it.
You think a 41-point win tonight will keep Draymond's mom from tweeting and calling you out?
Yeah, I'm sure it will. This is W that all that matters around here, so I'm sure she'll be all right.
Draymond's mom has become the Warriors' spirit animal. Is that what we're saying? Isn't he the spirit animal, Draymond? Steve Kerr talked about Steph Curry's toughness after Game 3. Punch it.
You know, for 4 days, everybody's been talking about him. What he did tonight didn't surprise any of us because that's just who he is. He's got unbelievable character and great talent, and it always rises when it needs to.
By the way, in Game 3, on his way to 35 points, Steph Curry at one point hits a shot, points at the floor, and says, "My house," with some profanity there. Like, that was so far out of character, I thought, for the mild-mannered, graceful tactician that is Steph Curry. Like, channeling a little Draymond, right? Here's Curry.
Curry waiting. Off a screen. Deep three, straight on. Got another one!
Boy, when he gets on a roll, he's unconscious.
They were up 11 at half. He had a bad game, too. Everybody was looking at him going, he looks frustrated. He looks like he's pressing. By the way, he was 3 for 20 in the series at that point. And then he went my house. And by the way, I'm not diminishing that as like a Draymond Green-like declaration. It was more Michael Jordan-like. It's not happening on my watch. Not happening on my house, at my house. Draymond Green said, Game 4, expect more of the same. Punch it.
It's important going into Game 4 that we approach with that same mentality. It's not the mentality that we're up 2-1. You know, we got to go in almost feeling like we're down 2-1. You know, we're able to get one in Houston. So now, you know, the way to protect that is come out Game 4, you know, guns blazing, trying to take care of business.
I felt like Houston, who split the first two games, kind of rolled over in Game 3. James Harden agreed.
Like I said, we just, you know, for whatever the reason was, we allowed them, you know, especially like I said, the end of the first quarter, what they have, 31 points, and second half, we came out too slow, too soft. Offensively, we didn't have any thrust, and they exploited it, you know. And so, you know, I think Curry had 27 points in that second half. He did a pretty good job in that first half, but, you know, just can't allow it to happen.
You can't let Steph Curry get going. I mean, Steph Curry looks for moments like that. In the East, LeBron, also in Game 3, huge performance by Cleveland. Here's LeBron talking about the big Game 3 win.
We liked our game plan. They just had too many open shots, too many easy looks.
It's Kevin Love, my bad. Here's LeBron.
I think my passing is right up there with every other aspect of my game. It was something I kind of just knew I had when I first started playing the game of basketball, to be able to see things develop before they actually develop. And then it was on me to kind of put the ball on time, on target to, you know, to my teammates ever since I was a kid and I started playing at age 9.
LeBron getting it done. Cleveland down 2-1 in this series. Doesn't it feel like Cleveland's ahead in the series? They're down 2-1 and everybody's going, can Boston win this thing? Brad Stevens knows why. In the playoffs, they're 1-5 on the road. He was asked about it. What's the difference, coach? Here's Boston's coach. Punch it.
Well, we were great in the regular season on the road. We were one of the better teams in the regular season. I don't have an answer for you in the playoffs, but all that is a moot point for us. We have to play well. We have to focus on us and play well and play with more substance.
Celtics 9-0 at home this postseason, now 1-5 on the road. Their lone road victory came in Game 3 in an overtime win against Philadelphia. They face having to hold off LeBron. Here's Kevin Love, who you heard from earlier, talking about the big Game 3 win.
We liked our game plan. They just had too many open shots, too many easy looks, and they didn't feel us in Game 1 or 2. So we felt like we did a lot better job of that tonight. Used the crowd to our advantage and came away with a big win.
Do you like Cleveland or Boston in the East? 503-417-7575. Weigh in. Tell me who you got in that series. I think the Eastern Conference is way more compelling. I think the Warriors, nobody touches the Warriors. Nobody can beat them in seven games. Nobody can win four times in seven games against the Warriors. It cannot happen without an injury. All right, coming up, who's getting a raw deal? You are.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.